Hi, my name is Yara and I'm the host of Life After Birth. Before we begin, I would like to acknowledge the Whadjuk Noongar people, the traditional custodians of the land on which this podcast is recorded. I send my respects and reverence to Whadjuk Noongar elders, past, present and emerging. On this podcast, we share stories and wisdom about the ups and downs of our mothering experiences, much like the First Nations people of Australia have done so through their storytelling for over 60,000 years. Through their oral traditions, the Whadjuk Noongar people have supported and celebrated one another and have passed down knowledge, values and lessons, providing a testament of the power and significance of sharing our own stories. In honouring them, we recognise the importance of storytelling in understanding our past, navigating our present and shaping our future. My hope is that this podcast carries this spirit forward in our conversations, acknowledging that while our stories may differ, they all hold value and contribute to our shared human experience. Hey Mama, I'm Yara Heary and this is Life After Birth. This is where you can find honest and vulnerable conversations that lift the veil on how mothers really experience life after birth. Join me as I talk to the experts in the parenting space, but not as you've heard them before. These conversations explore the common humanity in all our lived experiences as mothers, so that you're left feeling seen, heard, validated, and bolstered in your ability to weather your mothering storms. Hey everyone, and welcome back to Life After Birth with Yara. I am, as usual, very excited about bringing this next episode to you. This week, I speak with Chrissy Powers, who I have been following for quite some time over on social media. I just love the way she has this beautiful, authentic, warm presence. She feels like she's a friend from afar, but also she has this incredible mothering sort of energy to her. I have always loved that about her. I love the way that she shares her journey. And also the thing that really drew my attention initially with Chrissy was that she talks about purity culture and in particular how she has separated herself from purity culture. And that's certainly something that we talk about in the episode today. So let me tell you a little bit about Chrissy. So Chrissy Powers is a licensed marriage and family therapist. She's a mum, she's a wife, a writer, and an embodiment coach. She lives and works in San Diego, California, and helps people find wholeness from all over the world. Now, through her own personal healing journey, she's really found her passion in working with others, so helping clients heal from trauma, find their most authentic self, and just really helping them love the life that they're living while teaching them how to be in their bodies and how to be with their bodies. And you really hear this in the conversation that I have with her today. So obviously we hear about what her experience was moving into this season of being a mother, but also we hear her talk about her background in how she really internalized these ideas around being a good girl, again, purity culture and how that played a role. We talk about that and how she actually found herself in her late 30s while she was mothering her children. It's a really beautiful conversation and I hope that you enjoy listening. I hope that you feel seen and heard and found in these words. Hey everyone, I'm so glad to have you back here today. I have today the most wonderful lady that I have been following on Instagram for quite some time and just absolutely loving all the things that she talks about and just the way she holds space for her community over on Instagram is so beautiful. Welcome, Chrissy Powers. It's so wonderful to see you here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. What a wonderful intro.
Oh, yay. I'm so glad we finally got a chance to chat. Okay, so I'm really excited to hear a bit more about what your kind of lived experience has been with mothering. But before we get started, maybe tell us a bit about what your family looks like right now, your children, their ages, like who's around in your life.
Yeah. So I live with my husband and our three kids. Our oldest, Waylon, is 12. Ezekiel is 8 and Ruby is 5.
Oh, beautiful.
And I have to close my eyes as I say that because I'm like, I get their names mixed up sometimes. Like our life is so full. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I remember when my mom used to do that.
Yeah.
And I get it now. We are smack dab in midlife and we are like, our kids are out of the baby phase and everybody's in school and both of us work. So we're sort of like juggling life and parenthood.
Yeah.
And it's a lot.
Yeah. It's a lot. I like that. Mm-hmm. It's the way that most of us feel. And I so relate to, you know, the name thing. I feel like at the moment I'm in this phase where also feeling like, you know, it's just a lot, like all the things that you're sort of juggling. And also when I call out names, I feel like I go through this entire list sometimes before I actually get to the correct name.
Yep.
Sometimes they morph into, you know, I morph the two names together. And I think, how does that even happen? Like, I wouldn't even have been able to think of that, you know, on purpose. So, yeah, absolutely. So one of the big questions that I always start with is, who is Chrissy? Where do you come from? So I guess I'm wanting to, I guess, ground our conversation in who you are as a person, you know, who you were even before being a mother and entering this stage, and kind of like the background of where you've kind of come from.
I love that question. Who is Chrissy? I always joke that I'm like an eternal optimist, and I think I am. I think I want the most out of life, and I always have. I grew up in a wonderful family, an older brother, younger sister, mom, dad, still married. We were all really close and connected. I grew up in a really small conservative evangelical Christian church. My dad was one of the pastors, although that wasn't his main job. He also was like a, you know, really big in the taxation world here in the US. And so he would travel around. He was gone a lot. And then when he was home, it was like a different environment when he was home. So I learned very early on how to be a good girl. And I don't say that to, you know, say anything bad about like the religion I grew up with, but it's just my lived experience that like I didn't learn really who I was until probably my 40s. I'm almost 42, and I really feel like I'm discovering who I am for the first time in my life. And maybe all the things I, you know, endured in my 30s also helped me. I definitely think motherhood helped me, but it really became more clear when I turned 40, like who I was, who Chrissy was, without all of the outside influences or the rules and the ideas of like what a good woman was. And I really got to like redefine that for myself of what feels true inside of me. And I've always been really connected to my intuition since I was a little girl. I can remember being very connected to God and to my intuition.
Oh, that's so beautiful. Like that connection to intuition. And I imagine throughout your mothering experience as well, how useful that would be during that period. And, you know, obviously continuing on in all areas of life. I'm curious about when you talk about being a good girl, how did that kind of good girl, I guess, archetype influence you in life, you know, leading up to, I guess, being a mother, but just sort of setting that backdrop of, I guess, where you were in the world and how you were being in the world before becoming a mother?
Yeah. So I feel like being a good girl for me was doing things that other people wanted me to do in the way that they wanted me to do them. And like I said in the beginning, I was always really in touch with my intuition. And so there were times when my intuition would tell me, this doesn't feel right. And then I would have to divorce myself from that in order to get the approval of others. And so I did that because, you know, like we know, like we do things in childhood to receive love and belonging that no longer work for us in adulthood. And so for me, that was being the role model, being the perfect Christian, being the perfect, trying to be the perfect daughter. And, you know, some of it did probably save me from heartache, but some of it really, most of it really divorced myself from my body and from who I was or self-discovery. So the good girl for me looked like, you know, I just really didn't trust myself. I trusted everybody else outside of me but my.
And it's interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, when you talk about how, you know, in some ways that may have kept you safe. And I think sometimes, you know, not that this was your situation, but sometimes, you know, being in the world in that way keeps us safe because it actually isn't physically or emotionally safe to be ourselves, you know, like, or to do something against, you know, whoever is kind of in power or in control in that environment. And that is even just things like, you know, workplaces, school, you know, things like that, right? Yeah. Where you can understand that that happens. But also, you know, it's funny how the same kind of way of behaving and thinking keeps us safe and also can really put us in harm's way, right?
Right.
Because we're not allowing ourselves to be attuned to, you know, to our own needs or to our sense that maybe there isn't safety in a particular environment as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree 100%. That's very much that experience of it's both and, you know, it's like, yeah, there are things that I might have, you know, avoided, but also there were things that I didn't really get to explore within myself. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm really curious to obviously hear how, you know, that kind of showed up in your mothering, while also knowing that lots of people talk about that becoming a mother can be a bit of a catalyst of change of being that way because, you know, there's another, it's not just about us, right, anymore. It's about other people. But before we get into that, I'd love to know how you went into becoming a mother and what your kind of expectations were about being a mum.
Yeah, I went into it with very much the ideas that I had from my upbringing and my childhood that, you know, this was really what I was born for, is to be a mother. And while I do agree that I think I was born to mother, I also don't think it's like my only and highest calling. I mean, I think my children are my number one blessing, but I had a lot of expectations like going into it, you know, thinking that it would be everything that would fulfill me. And I don't think motherhood is my 100% fulfillment. It isn't. I have to get my fulfillment from other areas. And I'm not ashamed to say that. And I actually don't think our children should be our 100% fulfillment. I think that puts a lot of pressure on children. You know, my kids, when they make a mistake, I'm like, yes, you know, it's not a reflection on me. Yeah, it's not. It's their mistake to make. And it doesn't necessarily say that I'm a bad mom or that I'm, you know, failing in some way. It's just my childhood learning and learning how to be human. And so, yeah, I grew up just sort of viewing like that very nuclear family that I came from, you know, and I always wanted children, but I think I just didn't know what I was fully 100% signing up for. And now I'm so glad I found like the work I've done in my own personal therapy and then also with my clients, because it's just like I'm on that journey with them, learning how to heal ourselves, become better parents at the same time. Mm. And it's beautiful to like open up your mind and have a different perspective than maybe what you initially thought parenting or motherhood was going to be.
Yeah. When you say that you had lots of expectations about, you know, what this phase of life was going to be, how did that match up with what you actually found when, you know, your little baby was born and you took them home?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So I think a lot of women go into motherhood thinking that the day your baby's born is the best day of your life. And that was not the case for me. I had a very traumatic birth with my oldest. I had placenta previa, which led to a placenta abruption at 29 weeks. And then that was the first time I ever really experienced the fear of losing someone that I loved that deeply. And I didn't really, it didn't register until I was in the ER and realizing I could lose my son. And I was on bed rest for 2 months. And I was able to deliver him vaginally, which was like one of my, you know, goals or, you know, expectations. And so that was wonderful. But I had him, I was induced and I had him 4 weeks early and then came home and I was terrified. I had the worst postpartum anxiety and depression and I didn't even know how to name it. I just knew I was always on edge. Always anxious. My son had colic for 5 months. So I was just like, is this what motherhood is? Like, what did I just do to myself?
Yeah.
I'm like, did I just make the worst decision of my life?
Yeah, I get that. It feels like a slap in the face in some ways, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I can remember just staring at him next to our bed in our tiny little condo. And I was like, what? I am responsible for this human now. And I don't know if I was necessarily bonded to him yet with like that lovey-dovey like feeling that I thought I was going to have. I mean, I was so protective. I was so like, I would have done anything and everything for him. But that feeling of complete and utter bliss was not there until he was much older, maybe around 8 months.
Yeah. And how do you, you know, moving, and also I just really want to say like how much I resonate with that, because I have this very clear memory as well of I had a home birth with my first, and I remember like it was such a lovely experience. And I remember though when everybody left and I was sitting in the bed and I just looked down in the little, you know, sidecar and looked at him and just was like, oh God. That moment of like, I'm going to keep this little person alive and now I'm all by myself. Like what? Everybody come back now. Like, you know, that feeling of like, oh my God. Yeah. So intense. And so for you, what a huge experience for you to come into mothering with, right? Like coming off the back of, you know, those complications that you just talked us through, you know, and it's so hard, isn't it? Because you don't have time that you might otherwise have in different situations that have been really intense to actually sit and just process or just be with, you know, like because you just kind of hit the ground running and you've got to get on with kind of, keeping this little person alive. So, you know, and of course, coming into mothering with experiences like that out of birth, you know, makes that, I'm imagining, makes that harder from, you know, most people that I speak to have sort of talked about it in that way. Did you find that to be the case for you as well?
Yeah, I did. I feel like I came out of it. I had a lot of support at the time. Like it was interesting now that I think back, I'm like, oh, my sister was pregnant and she was 3 weeks. She gave birth 3 weeks after me. So my mom was trying to just like tag team both of us. And then my dad was also there present, but he had just gotten injured from a bicycle accident. And it was just really chaotic. But I mean, even I can remember flying up, my parents live around 8 hours away, and I flew home so that I could have help with my colicky baby. And my whole family, like my extended family, was visiting, and everybody took turns holding him and rocking him. And I just remember in that moment feeling like, okay, I'm going to get through this. Like, I'm not alone in this, like, you know, this will get better and I'm not a bad mom. And like, my son is struggling with something. Yeah, it was really kind of a rude awakening to motherhood with, you know, having your baby just, I kept saying, I feel like he's angry at me for bringing him into the world, but he was in so much pain. So yeah.
Oh, it's so hard, isn't it? And that feeling of wanting to know what to do, right? Like to make them feel okay so that they don't have that sort of distress. It's so challenging. Absolutely. And how beautiful that you had that support around. I mean, honestly, I feel like having the support early on is a make or break in a lot of people's experiences. So that's really beautiful to hear that you had that support. I'm interested to draw in elements of your life before having children. So, you know, when you talked through, you know, this kind of good girl archetype or that idea of like, you know, doing the things that you thought or believed that, you know, other people kind of expected or people around expected. How did you find, you know, that played out in your mothering? Do you think that there was a period of time where that was kind of showing up in the way that you were mothering as well? Or do you feel like that changed somehow in your mothering experience?
Yeah, I think it showed up when my oldest became a toddler. And that's when you start to like have to, you know, discipline. And we didn't really know how. Like, it never felt right for me to use corporal punishment. Although, you know, that's all I had in my wheelhouse to, you know, make sure he didn't run across the street I think I might have spanked him like twice. And I hated it. I hated it. And I didn't know what else to do. That was like the only real, you know, I kept thinking about like spare the rod, spare the child, you know, spoil the child, which was what was taught to me. And I mean, I quickly learned that that was not in line with my, you know, intuition as a mother.
Yeah.
And then I had to go inward and really heal from a lot of that pain, because that's how I was disciplined as a child. And, you know, mainly by my father, who has since apologized. And so it was really sweet to have him apologize. But I knew I didn't want my son to be, or any of my children to be, scared of me. And I didn't want them to listen to me or obey me because they were afraid.
Yeah.
And so quickly I learned, my husband, you know, we got on the same page right away. And that's when positive parenting or conscious parenting became more like open and out there. And we started reading and learning from other people. And then, yeah, we really adopted that belief and that way of parenting.
Yeah. And I just want to say, I just want to highlight how much work is involved with doing that when that hasn't been your own lived experience in your childhood. I'm also the same, like I come from that same sort of background, which was very much one where there was like, you know, firm consequences and punishment involved and things like that. And it's really hard to unlearn that. Like, there's the conscious effort of like having the insight that you, you know, want to parent differently, but then to actually do the work of parenting differently, even after you have the knowledge. So that's the other thing, right? Like having the information, but then really truly embodying that and doing the work within ourselves to actually undo and heal the parts that are still hurting from, you know, our own childhood experiences is like an enormous amount of work. So I just really want to honor that, you know, that you have been in that journey yourself, but just really for other people who may be listening as well, like, you know, it always sounds easy when we talk about it, but actually it's really challenging work. And where I have found it to be the most challenging is, you know, in those moments where we are under-resourced and we might be feeling triggered. And that's when those, you know, the thoughts and fears that are linked to those earlier experiences of our own really show up. And that's where the hard work really, you know, has to come in to really control and to, you know what I mean? And it's not even necessarily like to control so we don't hurt our children, but it's just the inner dialogue even, right? Like about what is happening in that moment. And even as you were speaking, I was thinking about how when we have been raised in a way, and I think a lot of women as well, like generally speaking, we've sort of raised in a culture that is very much one about like women, you know, are caregivers and we need to submit and, you know, we don't rock the boat and we don't upset people and all of that sort of thing. And I think that when we've grown up in a culture like that, and if we have family that also holds those kinds of values about how we need to be in the world and how we sort of need to tend to the well-being of everybody else emotionally and otherwise, it also, one of the things that I have found challenging in my parenting journey is also to get rid of the good child sort of archetype as well. So, you know, the idea that like a good child is essentially the same thing, you know, that I was told when I was a kid, which is like a child who listens, is compliant, you know, like all of that sort of stuff. And to give them space to actually be who they are, to make their mistakes, to, you know, sometimes, you know, they don't, well, it's not sometimes, often they don't listen, right? Because they're young and they don't have all of the, you know, circuitry running in the way that we do as adults, you know? So I wonder about that for you as well. You know, for me, that connection between having ideologies of my own around being a good girl or a good woman in some way and how that then relates to in motherhood, it feeds into this thing about a good child. And also like, you know, if our child is not behaving well or is not showing up as the good child, then who are we as the mother? Like that, you know, can feel like it reflects on us. So I'm interested to know your thoughts on that.
Yeah, that's such a good point. I think for me, really doing the same work as you, Yara, with letting go of the good child, we don't have that in our family. And we allow each child to sort of have their tantrums and then we repair after. And then we help them like find resources, like what could you have done differently and what could you next time, like maybe you can do some deep breathing. And so we're really teaching them alongside of ourselves how to co-regulate. I sat down just a couple days ago with my 12-year-old and put my hand on his heart and his hand on my heart. And we breathed together to get through a particularly hard moment. And I just like, I mean, just thinking back on that, thinking how whoa, that is so cool that I could show up for my son like that, even though, you know, like I wanted him just to get over it and do his homework. You know, I knew he was experiencing something really hard and challenging in his body. But yeah, having, you know, doing this work when you didn't have that, you know, as an example, like I had wonderful parents, but they didn't have the information that we have now. And so what they had was very limited. And so what we're building upon is, you know, we've come quite far in terms of mothering in this way.
Yeah.
And also, yeah, it's sometimes hard to sort of check, you don't want to check mark that kid that's like, oh, not making, you know, those mistakes or not having outbursts, because that's also, you know, we have one who is a lot more easygoing in some ways. And I'm always trying to remind him that like he's allowed to have emotions and he doesn't have to make everybody else happy. And it's not his job to make sure, like, he is so sensitive and he knows when someone else is not feeling good. And I'm like, I know, buddy, like, thanks for noticing that, but I also don't want you to feel like you have to take care of that.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're doing the same in our family, just real holding space for the big emotions and the big lessons, because we're deep in that right now.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm curious as well. I know something that you talk about quite a bit on your Instagram page is around, I guess, checking out of or divorcing, you know, sort of purity culture.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard you talk about that a little bit. And I'm curious about that in relation to these things that we're talking about as well. Can you tell me a little bit about that journey for you and how that's sort of influenced or played a role or shown up in your mothering experience as well?
Yeah. So the purity culture movement was really big in, I'm not sure how it was in Australia. I think it was probably a big thing there too. But really in the 80s, 90s, early 2000s, it was a big marketing campaign within the evangelical church that really stemmed from like this fear around AIDS, the AIDS pandemic, and then like unwanted teen pregnancies. And so it was this movement around true love waits and, you know, abstinence is the only birth control. So really that was all that was taught. And then with that is like, if you did have sex, then you were shamed and you were, you know, sullied for your husband and no one would want you and you're going to give less of yourself to your future husband someday. And there was a lot of slut shaming and things like that. It was just so toxic. And I didn't know that until my 30s. I joke that I aced purity culture because I was like, okay, if this is the right way to do it. And really, I want to honor my father. And really, I didn't know until I started doing this work how much my identity and my sexuality was tied to my father and the church. And that put so much pressure on me in my early 20s around dating and like feeling like, you know, you have the arousal, you have the desires, and then you feel so much shame and guilt after for something that is entirely normal and healthy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you don't want to, you don't have anyone to talk to about it because you're afraid of being shamed any further. And so it was just a lot of isolation and like secrecy and then shame. And then, you know, if you have grown up in this, then, you know, you get married and there's so many myths around marriage that you're supposed to just have the best sex life ever. And that's not normally the case.
No practice and no experience.
Exactly. No practice, no experience. And so I'm just blessed to have a partner that kind of went through that with me and like we grew together and then we like expanded in our beliefs and in our healing and in our sexuality together. So I think it's pretty much the best outcome But with our children, I had so much anxiety when I became a mom because I went to therapy once and I said to my therapist, I am so anxious. How am I going to get all my kids to the altar as virgins? And I'm surprised she didn't laugh. She just said, oh, that's not your job.
Yeah.
And I said, wait, what?
Yeah.
That's not my job. And she goes, no, that's not your job. Your job is just to teach your children how to connect to their heart and to their bodies and to know what no means and to know what yes. And like, I was just like, it gave me such a relief that like,
I bet,
you know, I want to teach my kids all the wonderful things about, you know, your body and what it does and, you know, how to respect that and honor it and have it be sacred, of course. But we're not going to raise them with the shame, and we're going to teach them, you know, what is a full body yes, what is safety and all that stuff. So it really gave me and my husband just a wonderful new way of looking at raising children today and teaching them how to connect back to their bodies.
Oh, what a beautiful permitting kind of experience. I just, when you spoke about your therapist, how she was like, hey, that's not your job. I just had this really full-on feeling in my body of like almost like an exhalation. Like I'm just imagining how beautiful that must have been for that part within you to hear that, oh, that's not my job. I get to put that down, you know, and not just for your children, but for you, right? Like the part in you that had for such a long time tried to uphold this standard for yourself as well. And like that permission of like, oh, okay, maybe that's not the most important thing, you know?
Right.
And the other thought that I'm having is also just about, you know, how pervasive this ideology around being a good girl, a good woman, you know, like a good, you know, put in whatever it is that the female is, right? Yeah. Like it's so pervasive in so many areas of our lives. And it's just constantly, we have to be so aware in some ways, right? Like of the kind of messaging that we're receiving in our culture. And then to undo that as you're going through parenting, again, like such a big job to be, you know, it's hard enough kind of doing the parenting of our real life children, but then to be doing the parenting and the healing for the children inside ourselves as well is a lot to do all at the same time.
Yeah, it's been, thank you so much for validating that, because yeah, I think it's a lot, and we need to be in community with other people doing this work or therapists or coaches to reflect that back to us. And so, yeah, for me, that was a very big aha moment in therapy where I could just exhale and let that down.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, how beautiful. And I'm also just so aware of like, just in your story, how much of a different legacy, you know, that you've already begun imprinting into your family, you know, from where you've come from. And I want to say that as well, because I think that when we are in our own lives, making the human mistakes that we make, and also with awareness of the things that we're trying to change from our past, right, to be different in our here and now with our family, I often feel like I'm not doing enough, or it's not that I'm not doing enough, but I feel like, oh man, there's so many things, right? Because I know the bigness of my own experience. And I think there's so many things. And I also think it's so important to sometimes actually look back at how many things we have already changed, right? And to really honor that and to be like, wow, there's so much new legacy that is being laid down for our families in the work that we are here doing, even if we don't get it all done, which nobody will, right? Like, yeah. Like so much change in that legacy that we're leaving for our families.
I love that. Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes you'll see little glimpses of it, but most of the time you're right. Like we don't see that unless we pause to reflect back on, oh my goodness, we have been through this and that and a colicky baby and a child with debilitating psoriasis and then one with ADHD. And then like we built a house and a business and oh my gosh. Yeah. It's everything. And
it's huge.
Just to really, yeah, give yourself a pat on the back for that change and healing and everything you've accomplished. It's so good to look at that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's so important. So what do you feel like has been your biggest area of growth so far? I mean, we've talked about obviously a lot of things that have changed for you, but what would you name as being, you know, what you see as your biggest growth?
That's a good question. I think my biggest growth has been redefining what a good mother is. I had such an amazing present mother who, you know, her job was to be a stay-at-home mom, and she was amazing. And so I kind of grew up thinking that's what a good mother is. And now I'm realizing that I have had to expand that because I work pretty much full-time. I mean, I'm blessed to be in private practice where I get to make my own hours, but there are some times where I can't make the, you know, the school activity that, you know, some of the other parents are at. And I naturally default to mom guilt and feel like, I don't know, I'm not on top of everything in every class that they're in, and I can't volunteer, and I'm not on PTA like I thought I would be. And I've had to give myself that permission to say, it's okay. You're still a very good mother. And this is the best way for you to be a mother, is to take on the roles that you have as like a provider and as a mother. But I mean, I struggle with that. I struggle with it and wonder, you know, a lot. Am I doing my kids a disservice by working? And I mean, I don't really have a choice here living in California. We both have to work.
But
it's hard. It's hard. And so I have to give myself a lot of grace and compassion and remind myself that I am a good mother, even if I'm not giving them 100% of my time all the time.
Yeah. And I just, yeah, I so resonate with that. It's one of those things where you do have to be conscious to kind of catch the thoughts, right? Like, so that they don't run away with themselves.
Yeah.
When you get in that guilt space about it. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, as I'm hearing you speak, it's really reminding me of like, you know, a good mother is diverse, you know, in terms of like how they look. It depends on so many things. And one of the things that I really believe in, and I always think to myself when I have those same thoughts, because I absolutely do, is, you know, the things that I do, like, of course, there are like financial reasons why I do what I do as well. Like, everyone has those same reasons. But also, you know, the work that I do is so deeply fulfilling to me and so passionate. And even if the work wasn't, other things that I do, right, provide that, or feed my soul, because it keeps me connected to people I care for. And I know I'm just such a better person when I actually look after myself. And looking after myself means I work. It means, you know, I exercise and I see my friends, and occasionally I might go to a concert or something. You know, those are the things that fill me, and also that tend to the various parts within me as well, right? And
yes,
I know that, you know, whenever I start to become like the crabby mum, that is when I'm trying to be really present all the time with my kids. That's actually when I'm the worst parent. when I am the worst version of myself is actually when I actually let all those things go that are the things that are for me, and I try to just fill everybody else's cup, it's actually when I become the worst. I become snappy.
Yeah.
I'm edgy. I have little patience. I find myself like lacking empathy with my children. Like, I just become such an awful version of myself.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, I think in some ways it's good, you know, that you have those experiences, so I can kind of remember, well, actually, when I'm around my children all the time and don't get a break, I'm actually the worst than I possibly could be. So feeling, you know, fulfilling my own needs actually means that I'm being the best version of myself that I can be for them. And it sounds like that's kind of what you're talking about there too.
Yes. Thank you so much for saying that. There are times where I'll go to work and I'll say, oh my gosh, going to work is so much easier than staying at home. 100% yes. There all the time.
Yeah, I feel the same.
Yeah. My hat is off to every stay-at-home mom, you know, that is doing that or homeschooling. Like, I just think that's amazing, and more power to you. But yeah, for me, that just wasn't my path, and it drained me. And I mean, I was home with my babies when they were really small, and that felt in line with what I wanted to do. And then once my youngest was two, I was like, yep, I'm ready to go back to work, you know, in an office and build a practice. And that has been so fulfilling and has made me a better mother. And every time I go away and do like a retreat or, you know, do my own training to become better at my craft, it does make me a better mother.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I totally feel that. Absolutely. I'd love to know actually a bit about how, and it might be both ways, because I find, you know, even for myself as a therapist, I feel like being a mother has absolutely influenced the way that I work and what I do specifically for work, but also it's the other way around as well. How has your experience so far of mothering influenced, you know, how you work or the work that you do?
I think I can hold space differently as a therapist now that I'm a mother. And more so, I think, because I've done the work on my own self, that has helped me show up differently as a therapist. But maybe the sort of nurturing or, you know, really seeing this person's inner child and what they needed as a child and possibly what they didn't get as a child helps me so much. I would actually say, though, it helps me to be a better mother than a better therapist. I'm a better mother because of my clients.
Yeah.
Yeah. I go home all the time. I'm like, okay, oh my gosh, like this person needed that. And I mean, yes, sometimes I can get away with myself and worry too much. Like I'm going to scar my children.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. But I'm like, okay, wow. Just working with other humans and hearing their story has helped me to be able to have a greater capacity for my children.
Mm.
And hopefully it works the same with my client.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, for me, I think it works for me in that I have perspective, I think, with the kids. Like maybe if I didn't do the work that I do and I didn't see adults and then have to be, as you say, like seeing the inner children of the adults that I work with, allows me to be at home dealing with the big hard things with my kids and being able to see into the future in some way about how that's going to be useful for them to act in a particular way with them, like to hold space for a particular way. Does that sort of make sense? I'm thinking maybe that's what you're meaning there as well. You know, like I have a sense of like, these are things that, you know, that maybe clients that I'm working with needed, and I can imagine how it could have been different for them, you know, if they'd had those things. Yeah.
Yeah. That is exactly what I mean.
That's a really good point. You know, I actually hadn't thought about it like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I hadn't thought about in that way before. Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah.
And Chrissy, before we finish up, I'd love to know, what do you most want to impart on mothers who are listening to this episode?
Oh, that it's all going to be okay. It's all going to be okay. And the more, like, if you're listening to this podcast, you are a good mother and you're wanting to learn more and you're wanting to grow and be the mother that your child needs. And so if you can do that, if you can hold space for your child and be a detective of them, then you are going to be fine. I am a detective of my children, not all the time, but just wanting to understand who these people are. You get to shape a little bit of who they are. But, you know, they're going to go out into the world and they're going to be their own person. And that is your job, to let them be their own person. And I think when I gave myself that permission, it helped me to relax and calm down, that it's not up to me to like make my kid be a straight A student or, you know, get the highest paying job or get married someday. Like, it's just my job to help them understand who they are. And so if I could give you any wisdom or advice, it would just be curious about your kids and yourself and, you know, give yourself a lot of grace.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, that's so beautiful. I feel like that really landed so deep for me when you were saying that. I feel like you were speaking right to my core, you know, in terms of like your job is to let them be who they are, you know, like that's really, really powerful. I hope that when people hear that, that that's really landing deeply for them as well. It has been such a pleasure to speak to you today, Chrissy. Thank you so very much for your time. For people who want to connect with you, where can they find you?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. You can connect with me through my website. It's chrissypowers.com. And you can also reach out to me on Instagram, Chrissy J Powers. You can DM me. But yeah, most like if you're wanting to learn about how to work with me or my embodied woman group, you can contact me through my website and that'll send you right to my inbox.
Beautiful. And I will put those links in the show notes as well so that people can easily find you after having a listen here. Thank you so very much for joining me. It was absolutely beautiful.
Oh, thank you so much. It was so great to chat with you as well. So thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much for joining me, Mama. If you enjoyed this episode, I would just love for you to leave me a review and follow or subscribe to be notified when the next episode drops. If you'd like to connect with me, you can find me over at Instagram, where my handle is at lifeafterbirthpsychology. And you can find out more about how I can support you on your mothering journey at my website, www.lifeafterbirth.com.au. See you back here soon for our next chat.